everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, here with Linda Van Ellen, working to bring you ideas, concepts, and guests help you lead a more positively minded life. The more you understand, the more your life is peaceful. And I don't just mean understand intellectually. I mean the more you understand, the more you grok, to those of you of Heinlein persuasions. So one of the things, it was such a fascinating combination of forces that led us to organize a show about one thing that people are not don't really understand, which has to do with fear. And we prepared this for you, and we were ready to give this to you, and then the program right before us gives a wonderful introduction about fear itself, bordering on the paranoia. Well, here, as clinicians, as licensed mental health practitioners, and whatever pseudoscience that involves, we want to bring this to you about paranoia. Yep, paranoia itself, what it is, what it's not, is jealousy paranoia. That's such a feeling that you have at times, right? Is a fear paranoia. Who gets paranoid? Who doesn't?
Yes, Armand. Yes, could you just tell us exactly what is paranoia?
Paranoia itself is an unfounded or exaggerated distrust of others, sometimes reaching delusional proportions. Paranoid individuals constantly suspect the motives of people around them and believe that certain individuals or people in general are out to get them. Now, I have to say that this is like a word, paranoia. It means persecutory. It means they're coming to get me. It means somebody doesn't like me. And it holds on a whole bunch of levels of disturbance.
Now, when you speak about a whole bunch of levels of disturbance, are there, in fact, different types of paranoia, Armand?
Yeah. There are three primary types, but then paranoia is also there with a couple of other types. I'll mention a couple of others first. With Alzheimer's, there is frequently paranoia. And when a person gets older and something seems to happen, for a little while there, before they veg out completely, they're very, very cautious, and we don't know why that happens. Now, you knew of a case, right? Didn't you know of a case where somebody got a urinary infection? What happened?
Yes, Armand. Actually, two cases. One where there was a temporary a senior I know quite well, 95. She went into this obvious delusional paranoia, hallucination, and it was traced to a urinary tract infection. And in fact, once they were able to rid the system of this infection, she returned to quite normal functioning.
Which brings us to Bonnie Bedelia, which on TED.com everybody should listen to, which is about how bacteria communicate with each other. You said there were two cases. What was the
other? Yes, and the other one was of someone I know again, in her 80s, where she has become somewhat suspicious. She'll sit in her kitchen, and when she's writing out checks, she mentioned to me that she felt there was a shadow behind her, and it frightened her. And she said, while I couldn't think that there was anyone in the house, my feelings were of fear and distress. So that too, that along with this feeling that when she goes into a store, again, there's this shadow person around her.
So the shadow is a very common symptom when it comes to dementia. That if a person talks about shadows, we know dementia is setting in. So that's an automatic. Of course, if they talk to anybody else, in fact, they will not go out during the day frequently because of shadows. That's how it progresses. But this is not what we're talking about today. I mean, certainly that is a part of it. Paranoid has a few different forms. One form is dementia, like we said. Not that it is a form of paranoia, but it becomes present there. And you have to understand this is the illness present, not so much the person's thinking. So what happens if you have somebody who's got dementia and you're trying to make them feel good and they start talking paranoid thought, you start reassuring them that everything is okay. But if you understood that the reassurance does not work, something else might work, it would be better for you and better for them. Okay? Reassurance is not always the answer. So that's one paranoia that goes with that. Then there's another paranoia that goes with depression. And there is a level of depression that becomes so severe that the person is convinced that they can't move because somebody wants to hurt them. So remember, this is the basis of it all. Is somebody wants to hurt me. Then comes, so those are the two odd ones. But the most serious one is paranoid schizophrenia. Now, we have to say what schizophrenia is. You know, people say, use the word schizophrenic a lot to mean things. It means you're really not on the planet. You're not in contact with reality. And it means, in paranoid schizophrenia, specific hallucinations, meaning you see things that aren't there, not shadows. You see somebody walking down the street with the head of a chicken on them, right? You hear things that don't exist. So now you could see things and hear things, those hallucinations and auditory hallucinations and visual hallucinations. You could have that and still not necessarily be paranoid, but it fits into the aegis of the paranoid schizophrenia. Because now we look at that because the way they treat that is the same way they treat paranoid schizophrenia, which is usually with medication. So why do we want to understand this? The reason we want to understand this is when you see somebody who is paranoid schizophrenic, well, virtually you won't see them. Unless you saw somebody walking around the streets with, you know, ragged clothes on, or somebody who should be in a hospital but they can't afford to keep them in a hospital, somebody who is without their medication clearly, who's shouting, screaming. That would be the form you would run into, but you normally would not run into a schizophrenic person because they would be hospitalized or medicated, okay? So then the next type besides the schizophrenic is called the delusional paranoid type. Now, this is a fascinating thing. Delusional people are convinced that they are, they have a delusion. They believe that they are special in some way. And they believe, therefore, that they could be Jesus Christ reincarnate. I had a man who was in my office who thought he was Napoleon. It could be any number of people. You could believe that you're very, very special. You're an angel on this earth. And you have this belief that that's the way things are. Now, delusional paranoia, or this delusional syndrome, which you see is categorized under paranoia, because you're making stuff up, you see. If paranoia had to mean something, it meant making stuff up and making bad stuff up. In this particular case, when a person has this delusional disorder, they are seeing and hearing things that aren't necessarily there, but it's not like a hallucination. You see, in hallucinations, you see things that aren't there. In delusions, you believe things about yourself that aren't true. Big difference?
Sure. I would imagine that I would describe that perhaps as when my aunt was seeing snow, she wasn't feeling threatened by it. But at the same time, she was afraid to go outside because for fear that the shadow would hurt her. So that would be the distinction of the two?
Yes, absolutely.
And another question, is it possible to be delusional without persecutory ideation?
A good word, persecutory ideation. Isn't that a nice word? Everybody should learn it. Persecutory. I like it. Ideation, another good word. We use that a lot. Ideation means thinking, and thinking like what's in your mind. So persecutory ideation is, I believe everybody's out to get me. I believe people want to hurt me. I believe people want to do harm to me. Persecutory ideation. Now, since it is a form of paranoia, can you be delusional, meaning I think I'm Jesus Christ, and not have any of the persecutory ideation? The answer is yes. I have seen people who believe that they are angels or they believe they have a past life and they're a second manifestation of the Queen of Sheba or something, and they believe it and they walk around that way, but they do not believe that anybody wants to harm them. There was a book, it's one of my favorite books of all, called The Three Christs of Ypsilanti. Have I given you that book? Gee, Linda, this is another gift. Ypsilanti State Prison. Must have been in the 70s. Three guys appear in the state prison, and they all believe they're Jesus. The psychiatrist decides to have a group, and he puts the three Jesuses in a group. So they are all convinced that they are the real Jesus, and they talk to each other. The process of doing it and the unfolding of it makes the book magnificent. I mean, it's wonderful to read. I'll tell you the end of the book. You know what they did? No. Each one took a different role. The ones who felt they couldn't hold on, one made himself the mother of Christ, right? The other one made himself something else, but they shifted their position to still stay within the delusional system. Fascinating the way the human mind works. It's just amazing how the mind works. I just read about a cockroach that could jump 40 feet. I mean, you know, deers. Were they trying to keep deers out of the garden, and now the deers are leaping like 12 feet? Leaping deers. Imagine going to sleep at night, and you're looking up at the moon, and your parents have put up a 12-foot fence to keep the deers out of your flowers. And suddenly you're looking at the moon and there are deers flying in front of the moon. You'd think you were paranoid. You'd think you were delusional. You'd call me up. Say, I saw Dan, deers. Well, those deers are now doing those jumps. All right, so this is two. We have the delusional. We have paranoid schizophrenia, a very serious condition, right? Usually doesn't come to your attention. Usually they take it, they medicate it. They do what they can to it. They cannot let this person out in the general public because they will cause havoc or be hurt. They are likely the person most likely to get beat up. Someone's going to club them. Someone's going to do something. Not a person to have out there. The third type is paranoid personality disorder.
And what exactly is that, paranoid personality disorder, Armand?
It's hard to see, because it's usually somebody who's negative as opposed to positive mind, but they tend to be self-centered, self-important, defensive, emotionally distant, constantly suspicious of others. Rather than have full-blown disorders, delusions, they have these little sneaky distrust of everything. What were you saying about the store, the person who goes
in? Is it similar to when a person goes in and is suspicious of, repeatedly suspicious, if the clerk makes an error in returning change? Once again, everyone there is out to get them. Or a person who is having coffee and sees a bunch of people who are speaking and laughing, thinks, oh, they must be laughing at me. It's something about me that they are mocking or they dislike. Person who never feels that their accomplishment is up to par because the boss doesn't like them.
That could be, I mean, that's most likely the fact that they're employed means that they're not schizophrenic. You see, because it's hard to have an employee who's schizophrenic. So yes. Yes, and one of the things that you see with people with paranoid personality disorder is you don't see it much because it sounds like a complaint. It sounds like they're just being negative. It sounds like WBAI. It sounds like, all right, let's pull it out of you. Look, this is what's wrong. Here's what's wrong. Here's what's wrong. Here's what's wrong. We feed paranoia, as does all the media. All the media in some way. Now, we don't mean to. We're an honest station. But the people who are worried listen with worry. So what do we say about worry? Do we say worry and paranoia are the same thing? Or should you not worry? Or should you not be paranoid? Well, when it interferes with your ability to either do work or have meaningful relationships, That's when it's significant. The paranoid personality does not have positive relationships. It usually impedes personal and social relationships. It impedes career development. People I know who are have paranoid personalities generally get looked over when it comes to jobs. They're the first ones to get accessed. Because somebody who's that negative is a pain in the butt to have in your place.
Is it usually the person that tends to be litigious, person who tends to sue a lot?
Well, you know, you touched on something. It's not usually the person. But if you had somebody who was bringing false suits and tended to sue a lot, you probably have a paranoid personality. I can understand people bringing suits. They call it the litigious, the querulous, Q-U-E-R-U-L-O-U-S, querulous paranoia. And this is the person who is looking to bring suit, but, you know, they want to sue.
They always find fault with something else? Or is it because they're feeling untrusting? Or they feel they're deserving something more?
Well, I don't know what they're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But what they're thinking is that I must do something. I must do something. That's the thinking. But that brings me to the question about whether paranoia is a thought or a feeling. And this is very important. When do we know, Linda, when does paranoia usually start in the personality type? What age?
Early adulthood.
Early adulthood. What
yes.
a coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
So you could be perfectly fine as a kid, and then somewhere in early adulthood, you start becoming paranoid. Why? Does it have to do with the emergence of the hormones? Does it be when the testosterone takes over and you start driving out to try to meet your mate? Or when women, you know, they have flooded with their hormones? Does that put a pressure on the body that makes you say, I have to be more careful? And therefore, that could turn into paranoia. So is that a physical manifestation or is that a psychological manifestation? Does the thought come first or does the feeling come first? Does the physical feeling lead to a sense of vulnerability? And with that sense of vulnerability, you say, hey, I got troubles here. I'm in danger. Because you know if you're menstruating for the first time, you know if you're just feeling your oats as a man, you feel vulnerable. A piece of you feels vulnerable and needy. And the body may just come up as a trick and say, okay, this is what we'll do. We'll keep you away from everybody. We'll keep you back from everybody. I mean, just look at the nature of this. In our genetic DNA, we have an olfactory sense. We could sense pheromones. You could smell pheromones, right? If you are close in genetic type to someone, let's say brother or sister, your receptors will not respond positively sexually. So generally, of course, there are exceptions to this. But generally, your DNA will turn you away from somebody of the same gene type because it believes that it will, you know, it will suffer by having babies who are the same DNA. What you want is a DNA that's different than yours. So the fact that the body has this amazing power on a genetic level to select and reject kind of always throws a question in my mind about what paranoia really is and where does it come from. We know that if a person is dead, in order to be paranoid, you have to be nervous. We know that. They're nervous types. Does the nervousness come first? Is the feeling of distraught first and the thought of paranoia second, which is the way it looks? Or do they come together? This is Armand DeMille with Linda Vanella here with the Positive Mind. We're talking about the litigious personality, so if you're being sued, you may just be having that, and then you could look and find a history of how many times that person is sued, and if you could find such a history, how many actions they brought, you find it's fairly easy to deal with. The exact cause of paranoia is unknown. Could be genetics, could be neurological abnormalities, could be changes in brain chemistry, and it could be stress. It's also a possible side effect of drug use and abuse. So, smoke a joint? Nah, makes me paranoid. How many times have you heard that? People who know it makes me paranoid have had the experience of being paranoid when smoking marijuana, and they can actually feel the worries. Now, why would that happen? Well, maybe when you smoked your marijuana for the first time, you felt a sense of openness and expansion that was beyond anything you've known. And by doing that, you felt vulnerable. And that what you're really challenging is that level of vulnerability, not the trust of the other person. And there are certain drugs, you know, marijuana, cocaine, alcohol, amphetamines, they will engender some kind of fear, stress reaction. Now, for the paranoid personality disorder, we have the following categories, right? They must be suspicious, unfounded suspicions, believes others are plotting with them. Number two, preoccupied with unsupported doubts about friends and associates. Now, when I say preoccupied, you know, you can imagine your mind is nervous. It says to you, danger, danger, danger. It goes fishing. What could I perceive as a danger? So one of the things that you will do is suspicious. You look around, where's the danger? Where's the danger? Where's the danger? Is it him? Is it her? You get preoccupied with unsupported doubts about your friends. You're reluctant to confide in others due to a fear that the information may be used against you in the future. You read negative meanings into innocuous comments. You bear grudges. You perceive attacks on your reputation that are not clear to others. You're quick to counterattack, maintaining unfounded suspicions regarding the fidelity of a spouse or significant other. People with paranoid systems usually go through, a complete physical examination because there are some possible organic causes or environmental causes. I'm sure even lead paint, you know, can cause that kind of stuff. If a psychological cause is suspected, a psychologist will conduct an interview, and there are many ways to treat it. With paranoid schizophrenia, I have worked with paranoid schizophrenics myself. I would say out of 20 that I worked with, I was successful with two. Two out of 20. One was a young man who believed he was Wingate Stillwater III, who was a rock musician. He really was an accountant. And he believed he was this rock musician, and he was playing for Alexandra, of Nicholas and Alexandra. And he was in love with her. So he believed he spent his life on stage playing for her. But there was a problem. Alexandra loved Robert Redford. This is true. I mean, that's true, but this is what came into my office. And she loved Robert Redford because Robert Redford would wheel Alexandra's chair, because she was in a wheelchair, when she went to the concert to hear Wingate Stillwater play. And Wingate didn't know how to play properly. So he felt them getting up and walking away, walking out, and that was his great fear. So they brought him to me, and he was a mess. He was a mess. He was worried all the time, and they didn't want to medicate him, and I don't blame them. What I noticed about Wingate Stillwater, I mean, he said he was played guitar, and I said, well, the trouble with you, Wingate, and I just happened to have a pair of my drumsticks handy, because not because I eat turkey, but because I used to play drums. So I pulled out my drumsticks and I said, the trouble with you is you're out of rhythm. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, you see, you're playing the right song, but you don't have a good rhythm section. I said, what we got to do is figure out what's your better rhythm. This way you play your song better. And believe it or not, Wingate Stillwater III eventually faded into the background. and Harry appeared. That was my successful story. Another story is a man walks into my office and he's 85 years old and he says he's Napoleon. He said he's got his horse waiting downstairs. His wife is there. He doesn't know why he's in my office. He was brought in by two elder people. And he was a sickly 85. And it came to choice. I had to say to myself, what am I going to do with this guy, you know? And his family comes and sits down. He believed he was Napoleon. This is delusional disorder, just as I described. So he comes in and I told his family when they came back. I said, this man is 85. He doesn't look like he's got many more years to live. We could bust him. We could bring him to the awareness that he is not Napoleon. And when we do that, he's going to have to face the misery of his life and the fact that he had this belief for so long that it stopped him from ever having a relationship with anybody. I said, we could do that. We could bring him to reality. And he will have a period of time when he will be suffering from awareness. Or we could leave him alone. Make sure he doesn't endanger himself. Right? And just keep him at the best possible level you can without shaking it. That's the decision they made. It was up to them, of course. And that's the decision they did. And it turned out he lived exactly 3 years longer. And they buried him in full Napoleonic regalia. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about paranoid schizophrenia. With the paranoid schizophrenia, they have antipsychotic medications. Now, you know, I know most of you and I think that medication is junk. Junk because it's like they give you medication for medication for medication for medication. But some of them are magical. Some of them you would not be able to lift your head unless you took the medication. There are some people out there who get so bitten by the bug that they wouldn't be able to function. So for those people where medication is there, we have all these invented medications, they have certain side effects, and they pose long-term risks, but in the long run, at least the person could spend a little time on the planet with the rest of us. So medication is one of the ways that they do it. They also do electromagnetic therapy or electroshock therapy. Now that sounds really crazy, doesn't it? I can't imagine it working, but I saw a case. This was a case in Holland just recently where that person went through everything natural that they could do to help themselves, but still lived with this dread and depression. And then was given medication and still lived with this dread and medication, then took one electroshock therapy, and it lifted. And that was just recent, so what do I know? Because of the inherent mistrust felt by most individuals who are paranoid, they usually have to be coached into or coerced into entering treatment. They won't, in general. So it's very hard to get a paranoid person to be in therapy because they would be paranoid about the therapist too. Very hard to. And if you did, you would have to know that that's what you're dealing with. The practitioner must know what they're dealing with and how they're going to deal with it. Not easy. But you've seen all levels of this in your own life, my friends. And when we get back from our break, please call us with 212-209-2900 and we'll hear some of your relationship to paranoia itself. 212-209-2900. Not yet, because we're going to take a short break and I'm going to play you some music as usual, and then we'll be right back.
try, cause I'm scared to fail. I'm scared to die, cause I'm scared of hell. I'm scared to kiss, I'm scared to hug. I'm scared of sex, cause I'm scared to touch. I'm scared to look, cause I'm scared to see. I'm scared of you, cause I'm scared of me. I'm scared to fly, I'm scared to crash. I'm scared to move on, so I live in the past. I'm scared to fight, cause I'm scared to bleed. I'm scared to love, cause I'm scared he'll leave. I'm scared of drugs, I'm scared to drink. I'm scared to swim, cause I'm scared to sink. I'm scared to learn, cause I'm scared of truth. Don't wanna gain weight, cause I'm scared of food. I'm scared to think that the label dropped me. I'm scared to think of my album flopping.
This may sound silly, but it's true. So don't pretend it ain't you too. We all afraid of something here, cause you ain't human without fear. Hey, hey, hey. Hey, hey. Oh, 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 oh. I'm scared to start, cause I'm scared I'll quit. I'm scared that people won't like my shit. I'm scared of fame and paparazzi. A rumor starting and people watching. I'm scared to grow up, cause I'm scared to get old.
Jasmine Sullivan. Fear, fear. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with Linda Vanelli here on The Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM, in case you're afraid to listen. Afraid to listen.
Armand, I think that's a wonderful, wonderful song, and those lyrics are certainly worth listening to. But she says, we are not human without fear. Does that mean that we need fear, Armand?
Well, you know, fear. Does every animal need fear? How much of my life do I spend being afraid? A tiny amount. Itsy bitsy. When I was younger, I had more fear. What about you? Are you the same way?
Well, yes. And I was going to ask, you know, aren't there times when it could be a temporary fear? Sure. When I was younger and I would be in a strange area, I would certainly feel intense fear.
But now if you're in a strange area?
I don't go to the strange areas as much. So I kind of avoid it. That's an interesting piece. But I can think of times when I was more frightened than at other times, yes.
Sure. And let's say you were taking a thyroid medication, right? And your thyroid medication was out of balance and you didn't take it. Now, you've had that experience, right?
For sure. Mm-hmm.
And what does that result in?
Well, everything is exacerbated. Everything is heightened. It's a heightened sense of fear. So another time I'd say, okay, I'm a little uncomfortable. This time I'm just almost
like a nervous wreck.
Like a nervous wreck. It's intense.
Yeah. And now that's interesting that thyroid medication could do that. Mm-hmm. Plus or minus thyroid. Now plus or minus sugar, plus or minus sleep, plus or minus a whole bunch of things. But now let's go on a normal level. on a normal level, in order for you to have grown up as a human, or any animal, has got to have fear built into it at the beginning. Some children, I think, really lose it nowadays because they get protected from all fear. Then they get out into the world and they're fearless. And they're kind of at the mercy of the world. Because it seems to be an appropriate amount, an amount that you have to get by, and then there seems to be the exaggerated amount. Now, I'm going to recommend to everybody a book, a short story. It's called The Burrow, meaning the animal, the burrow, the one who burrows underground. And it's by Franz Kafka. Kafka's a great writer. It's a short story. It's about a guy who believes totally paranoid existence, totally, totally, totally paranoid existence of an animal, and talks about what it feels is going to happen. It's a gift I give you when I tell you to read this. So there's an appropriate amount of fear at times, and then why would you be afraid? What's to be afraid of? And I think you said something very important. I walked down the street where there's a bunch of people who were scary, right? That's when I was younger. Nowadays, I walk down a different street. Fascinating. 212-209. There's one other thing, 2900. One other thing about religion. Yeah, there's a thing about religions. You know, I was wondering, I was listening to talking about Israel and what kind of a state Israel was and how Israel has a lot of fear built into it. That it's a basic, you know, let's watch out, let's not let it happen again. Let's, you know, there are some cultures that have much more, whereas in Samoa, you know, there's not much fear at all. Samoa. You hear what they say to each other? Hey, would you like another potato? I'll have Samoa. Samoa, such a nice place. So you have this separation of part of a culture, and it could be in a culture. But then when you get Catholicism, we get the devil, we get Satan, we get punishment. I saw a man the other day who had an external relationship who believes that he's condemned to be committed a major sin and he stained his soul forever. Now, these become fears that are put in you to keep the religion going. As long as we get you too frightened, you know, we're going to make it illegal for you not to have babies. Right, so that you'll have more babies to keep the religion going. You know, and there's a lot of good things about religions and the way they organize and help people gather and so on and so forth. But sometimes these fear inductions go to the bone. And you get poor children who get so frightened. They used to use, I remember the priest used to use the cross, Jesus on the cross. The way he used to use it, he said, that's what they do to bad little boys. I mean, how do you misuse that one so well, right? That's what they said. And we used to look at it all the time and say, gee, we better be careful. We didn't say geez.
But may I say that I think that in the past, if we look briefly at history, fear was always used to corral, correct, and discipline people, whether it be on a statewide or in a family. I know my own mother would often say, respect is fear. So they would actually frighten you into what they believed was doing the right thing. So if you're raised like that, how is that interpreted so that we can function in a fearless kind of way?
One thing I guess we should mention is counterphobia. Sometimes when you're afraid of something, you develop a kind of a phobic response to it, like afraid of heights. And what people do is they do a counterphobic thing. They go jump from these great heights on purpose and challenge themselves. So one way you deal with fear very often is to put yourself in the most fearful situation possible. And there are certain personalities, and usually these are the wiry types of personalities in the Enneagram, they're called a six, that tend to become more frightened and more paranoid than other people. And they, you can usually see it. They're scared. It's a little like, imagine Woody Allen as one of these types. You know, all the fear that he talks about, all the insecurities. Hey, let's take one of our calls. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand. My name is Carlos from West Babylon.
Hello, Carlos.
Hey, I have a question about now. I know certain fears are made to keep you in place also. I think certain fears are made to keep you in place.
Sure. Which ones?
Now, I'm saying the fear if you're stepping off the curb, a car is coming, the fear if you jump off a ladder to something too high.
Okay, now stop with me a minute.
Okay.
When you jump, do you have anything to do with ladders?
No, I don't.
Okay, you have, so curbs. Whatever the example is that fear or is that caution? Because if you're frightened, okay, let's look at what fear feels like, okay, Carlos?
Yes.
When you feel fear, I mean, when you were a kid, did you ever get beaten up?
Yes.
Right? Did you ever get beaten up by a gang of kids?
Not by a gang.
But by one guy?
Yes.
You remember when he was beating you up and you couldn't stop him?
Yes.
Remember how frightened you were?
Very, very frightened.
Call that fear.
Okay.
Call that fear. Now, let's say you smell smoke in your house.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, I better check it out. I better go look around. I better see something. We'll call that caution. We'll call that concern. The fear is when everything in your body reacts.
Ah.
You see, when you're in that kind of a panicky feeling, that's
a question. Why is it, and this is a little bit off topic, why is it that people who have been victimized become servants or want relationship with people who abuse them in a victim type circumstances? Is that a type of fear? Is that a brokenness? Is that fractured?
You never did that, did you? But somebody you cared about did that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so you had a lady friend?
Yes.
And she was attracted to somebody who was abusive to her?
Who had already abused her.
And so she still feels attached to him?
Yes.
And you wonder why?
And wants a relationship, and I can't understand why.
Okay, so here's one of the things we know. One of the things we know is that sometimes if you feel powerless, you identify with the aggressor. And by being with the aggressor, you feel less powerless. So she, in a way, even though there's an abuse present, she's feeling more powerful because she's connected to that abuse. Now, that doesn't bring us to the question about why you should be in a situation where you have somebody who can't love you properly, when you, Carlos, sound like a very sensitive man who could use... Certainly used to be held. So you must have not had much safety as a kid. As a kid, you must not have felt very safe.
Probably because of the absence of my mother.
She was gone?
Yes.
What happened to her?
Well, she married someone, and they moved off to Paris and didn't see her for a long time.
Wow. And so where'd you stay behind? With your aunt? With your grandmother? Where'd you stay?
My great-grandmother was my mother.
How many kids were there?
Oh, honestly, there was only one. So I felt like an only child, but the only child that was the only person in the world.
The only person in the world, especially one that didn't have a mother. Did you miss your mother?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Not easy, Carlos. You know, now let's think about this. Here you are having to deal with, as a kid, a mother who runs off to another place with a man who she chooses over you. And here you are in the current pain of having a relationship with a woman who runs off with a man who she chooses over you.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that a funny coincidence?
Quite.
Now, here's what they say about this. This is a painful realization. However, maybe your body is teaching you this time you're going to handle it better, Carlos. This time... You're going to handle it better by not holding on desperately to something that is an illusion and something that hurts you.
Yeah.
You know, Carlos, it's time to let somebody love you who can.
thank you.
Yeah. So, you're welcome, Carlos. Thanks for calling in.
All right. Bye, Armand.
Bye-bye. 212-209-2900. Armand DeMille, you dare get on the phone. Oof. Watch out what I see. I saw him being beaten up as a kid. Maybe it's a delusion. Maybe it's a hallucination. Maybe I have hallucinations. You know, Linda, because I get on these phones when I'm talking to people, I see things. So I feel like one of these guys with a crystal ball, you know, but I don't like to talk about that. And maybe they're just delusions. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there.
I have your guest, actually, your last caller kind of trumped my call earlier. I was thinking of not that your fears are the problem, because they often are legitimate. They have come from so many places and layers that it's mostly in how you remember them and where they get stuck. If they're, in other words, if you have a fear about something, it's probably because, at least in my experience, that was a place where your powerlessness was frozen and you didn't actually get to turn it around and counter it. Whereas other fears...
Be more specific. What fear do you got?
Well, I can't say in a specific sense right now because I wasn't calling about one.
I know, but why don't you tell me anyway about a specific sense, because I'm so good at what I do.
Well, the most common one, I think, that I experience now is the fear of not having an economic future, things bouncing around to the point where you're not sure how you're going to be secure or not. So the question is...
Can I ask you this? Do you have a secure emotional future?
You mean as apart from an economic one?
Yeah.
Generally speaking, I think so.
So your heart is able to say, okay, I'm going to be okay one way or another.
Yeah, I always have been.
But you run into trouble when you think about the economics.
Well, because it comes up. Whenever it comes up and you're in that thing of, now what am I going to do? Yeah. The fear, even though I've, you know, overcome it many times in other circumstances, it still returns when that empty void is there, and you got to go back out and find.
So what was your first name?
Cookie.
Hey, Cookie. So if this is true, are you alone in having to deal with this all the time? Is this
your... Well, I'm
your,
the only one who decides where I'm going to be next. I mean, I can't...
So
can
there's
have,
no partner there?
Not at the moment, no.
Okay, and did you ever have a partner with whom you shared these kind of concerns?
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm.
So this,
and then other times, the partner, I was the secure one. And
right,
they
the
had
other times, they were just right.
Back and forth, yeah.
Yeah. So it sounds to me, the two things that happen when you get to be as wise as you are, Cookie, you know, something happens where you say to yourself, relationships are good, but if I don't have a relationship, I'm still going to get by on my own. I'm going to do my community work. I'm going to have my friends. I'm going to be a vibrant person. I am not going to hang my head on having a relationship. That's it. If it comes, it comes. If it doesn't come, it doesn't come. I'm going to get by. Is that true about you so far?
Not only that, but sometimes it's a great opportunity just to remake yourself.
Absolutely.
If the relationship is hanging you back.
Absolutely. And while you're doing that, somewhere along the line, you know what's going to happen? Somebody's going to tap you on the shoulder and his name is going to be Carlos. And he's going to say, hey, Cookie.
But what I was getting at was what your guest host had said before about how she just doesn't go to those places, the strange places.
Yes.
And what I'm saying is that we have a combination of things where we go back to the same things that we've been successful at. We succeed at them again. Sometimes we go back to the same fear and we just avoid it. And then other times we're just completely flummoxed by it, either temporarily or sometimes even permanently. But I'm saying that each fear is connected to a memory. And my point is that what you remember and how you remember is even more important than the fear.
Yes, it's true. And one of the things they also learned is that the way you remembered it the last time.
Right. That's what I'm... Yeah.
Exactly, right?
Where did you put yourself... At that last, did you leave it? Did you conquer it? Or did you forget it, try to forget it? Or?
Well, how do you conquer it? If you have a fearful thought, how do you conquer it?
There's two. I usually have two ways. One is that I just hold my breath and dive in real hard at the very thing I'm the most terrified of, which isn't too often. I can't say I've done that as often as
hold your head, and let's say you're worried about being broke and being penniless. You just hold your breath and imagine you're completely desolate?
No, the opposite. I imagine myself first desolate and then madly successful.
Okay.
But I first have to go through that valley of horrifying feeling.
Very important. Very
you know,
important.
Have to really just
there is
panic.
No birth
I break
without
down,
it.
Right, a couple of days of just helpless, oh my God. And then I'm like, wait a minute, what is this next exploration going to be? And then it's a sense of adventure. So that part of it is the diving in. And then other parts is just laughing your butt off because you see little funny things that just jolt you right out of it. And if you take advantage of them, like my birds are so antic and clownish the way they do things, and they have different fears from me. You know, the way they just dance around back and forth, it just makes me laugh sometimes because they're just such, they're so adorable that whatever I could be afraid of, I just know that right that moment I'm not going to indulge it. I'm just going to enjoy what clowns they are. You know, and the laughter gets me sometimes to a point where I can dive in.
You're my kind of person. I'll tell you, the other day I was driving back and I had this strange thing happen. I lost my wallet. And I went, oh, my gosh, I lost my wallet. I lost my driver's license, my registration, my money in the bottom. I lost the wallet. Knew the wallet wasn't going to be returned because I actually dropped it on a highway. I will never explain that. But I did, right? Now, you say the words. And so I have this big overreaction. And then within 2 hours, I say, wait a minute, it was only a wallet. And I go online, and I replaced everything online, except for the cash that was in the wallet, and I realized that I had my identity tied up as if I had lost my identity.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a wallet. Nothing
well,
more.
Well, it could be identity theft waiting for you around
the corner. Yeah, yeah, it'll all be. Everything was stopped. Everything was, it was cool.
Mm-hmm.
It was cool. See, I think we
you have to endure the fear, and then by helping yourself get to another place with the fear, then your memory gets solidified as either having faced it or walked away from it. You have to go back and see where you left a certain fear, or else you'll never go back again.
That's good advice, Cookie. Good advice. You should run a fear clinic.
Not easy. Scared? I'd be scared to know.
You'd be scared to run a clinic, right? What if nobody pays?
But it's a sensitive subject because we have so many fears, not only just the childhood ones, but then later experiences, and the biggest fear, I think, is just plain confusion. You're only afraid because you're confused. A doesn't look better than B. B doesn't look better than C. Now what? You're like in a moment where like too many alternatives crash together and you don't have one, or you don't see a path, so naturally you don't know. But if you do something really fearful, or you get yourself in real trouble, and somehow you get yourself out of it, suddenly you have a memory of also yourself where you do know how. You know how. You know somewhere that you know how. Even if it's a different fear, a different occasion, a different thing, you've already done the big one, so to speak. So,
Cookie, thank you very much. Say hello to Carlos for me. I will be back with you tomorrow at 1, my friends. This is Armando Miller, The Positive Mind. You can get a copy of today's program, if you haven't heard it, at wbai.org. Or or you can also get it through the website, thepositivemind.com. Bye-bye for now. Thank you, Linda.
You're welcome.
Join me Sunday, December 18th at 1 p.m. for the Everything Old is New Again Holiday Show, a benefit for WBAI at the Metropolitan Room, located at 34 West 22nd Street in New York. For more information or to make reservations, visit our website at www.oldisnew.org or call 212-206-0440. That's Sunday, December 18th at 1 p.m. for the Everything Old is New Again Holiday Show with me, David Kenny, at the Metropolitan Room. Come spend a lazy afternoon with me. Happy holidays, everyone.
It's a lazy afternoon. Hi, this is Gil Scott here, an unknown bluesologist, speaking to you on Free Speech Radio, WBAI 99.5 on your radio dial. Stay here.